The last word of the line is vihine. It's sort of just below halfway down the middle of the page. Everybody got it?
Mm, go.
It says, in English would be,
go for it.
However, it is with regard to this appearance. Now this grade of subdivided into. Mm-hmm. Okay? Mm-hmm. Right there, mm-hmm. By the new paragraph. Vihine Dregetzu, when we're talking about a tzaddik, mm-hmm. Viralo, a tzaddik who is not totally righteous. It's mischalekas l'rivavos madregos. You have millions of levels of incomplete tzaddikim. Be'enyin v'chinis miyad hara hanishir ma'achas me'arvi yisaitis haroim. When you're talking about how little remains from the four elements, the four, as he calls them, the four evil elements, that he said in chapter 1 that the soul is comprised, as is everything, of four, is a composite of four parts: earth, water, wind or air, and fire.
Right.
And said that the attributes of the soul are manifest or reflections of these. For example, in the animal soul, he said that, for example, from the element of earth comes laziness and depression,
right? Yeah,
because those are very, very heavy. From water comes
licentiousness
and desires. Because when you want to eat something that's delicious, you want to eat more of it. So the more you give into your desires, the more they grow.
Yeah,
boasting, bragging, and etc. Idle chatter comes from
hot air,
from air, and anger and arrogance come from fire. Okay, so everybody's got this in composition. This is what their animal soul is made up of. But he said also that the animal soul in the Jew is also we have good animals. Like, for example, it says that Jews are by nature merciful, humble, and like to do good things for other people. So he says here, now, suppose a person is now. So we say that a person is not completely righteous. Well, how not completely righteous is he?
Yeah.
So there are, you know, innumerable levels of how not completely righteous the person is, depending on what traces of these bad characteristics this person may have. Now, remember, we're talking about a tzaddik. And a tzaddik, if someone's going to use it, you can take it off the table. A tzaddik is, we're going to describe over here, is a person who has no inclination towards bad. And we described said at the top of the page that the evil is in him, is totally and completely controlled by him. It doesn't even allow him to desire this stuff. But he doesn't totally completely hate it, or he doesn't completely not like it, as the case may be. He has a little bit of a like towards it, but for the most part, he is...
Or a little tolerance, maybe.
Yeah, he has a little tolerance of it.
Right.
So that's what makes him incomplete. So how much tolerance is many different levels. Or, he says, another way of looking at it, how nullified it is in 60. I think we did this last week.
We did this first piece. Go ahead.
Okay. As an example, it says that how nullified it is in 60, or be'elef, or avava, or 1,000, or 10,000, or kiyotzi al derech mashal, behein hein, bechinis tzadikim, harabim shebechol ha'deiros. And they are the tzadikim in every single generation. There are 18,000 incomplete tzaddikim throughout the 6,000 years of creation. Okay. Who these people are, I haven't got a clue. How would we have any idea or inkling who they were? Nobody knows. I mean, because you think about it, everybody's going to say, what person's going to, you know, that guy over there, he's a tzaddik. But you know what? He's just a little tzaddik. You know, nobody's going to think that, you know, you're thinking, really, the guy's a tzaddik. You know, thinking, you know, he's a tzaddik, but he kind of like, you know, he likes the Detroit Lions, for example, so, you know, this is, you know.
Yeah, that would be bad for him.
Right, exactly.
No, question. It says that there's millions of levels. Does this mean each tzaddik could possess more than one level?
We would hope that a tzaddik of such would work on himself such that he ascends in how much he gets closer to completely tzaddik.
Right, but I mean, but the
see, you're going to say, what, there's 18,000, and so Joe Tzaddik is number 17,999,000.
No. What I'm driving at here is where I'm going is if there's myriads of levels, but there's only 18,000 tzaddikim, it would imply that each one of them has different traits that might have levels of incompleteness.
There's nothing that forces that to be, because you could say you have a tzaddik on level 1, nobody on level 2, 3, 4, 5, and 6, and have a guy on level 8, you know, whatever that might be.
Okay, but
nothing's going to say, no, it doesn't correspond number of levels
I'm not looking for a gradation here.
Okay.
What I'm trying to ask is If a tzaddik has a, I don't want to say flaw, because that's not, I don't know if that's a proper term, but
if it's incomplete or whatever it happens to be, yeah.
But would it be, is it one flaw in say in the attribute of in
oh, he wants or this could guy, it be, this guy has a couple
be,
of flaws,
or could it be several flaws?
Yeah, this guy he said whatever is missing in any of the four attributes.
Ah, okay, all right. So now I can understand why there could be myriads.
The guy could be have a little bit of laziness in him and a little bit of arrogance in him.
Okay, got it.
Ah, Almailis Tzaddik Gomer. This is where we actually got up to last week. When you're talking about a totally righteous person, Sha'amar Rashbi, that Rabbi Shimon Bar Yochai said, Ra'isi b'nei Aliyah ve'heim mu'atim. I see the b'nei Aliyah. B'nei Aliyah, he translates, I think, as men of distinction.
Superior men, yeah.
Superior men, okay.
Men, wait a minute. He's making this plural.
Yeah. I see that there are these type of superiors. These type of tzaddikim are few. Okay, and it doesn't say. By the way, the translation is the
few, yeah.
The translation in lends to interpretation, because you would think, well, maybe that's this the exclusive, because the word b'nei aliyah could be women also. Women could also be tzaddikim.
Sure, of course.
Men don't have a monopoly on being righteous. So, and he says, you have these Nashim Tzidkaniyos, these righteous women for whom Israel were redeemed from Egypt, for example. So he says now, we're calling them B'nai Aliyah. So the translation of B'nai Aliyah would be people of ascent. People who have gone up. Okay, and there are very few of those people who you would call B'nai Aliyah. These are like high quality people. Now, well, who is this saying this? This is Rabbi Shimon Bar Yochai. Rabbi Shimon Bar Yochai would qualify as one of these people, when we're talking about B'nai Aliyah, people of ascent, he would be one of them.
He would be one of them.
Because his feet didn't really touch the ground. He just lived in another world.
No, he's not the same.
He's the one who compiled the Zohar.
Right. No, but who was it that claimed to be a Bani?
No, that was Rava.
That was Rava. Okay. Yeah. Good.
Okay. So, and we see that, for example, when Rabbi Akiva's yeshiva of 24,000 students, they sat in order of like placement. So he was put number 2, behind Rabbi Meir. And he went and he asked, "How come you're putting me number 2 behind Rabbi Meir?"
Yeah.
Because he was actually far greater a scholar than Rabbi Meir.
Yeah.
But on the surface, he was a weirdo. He was just totally flipped out because he just didn't live in this world.
Rabbi Shimon Bar Yochai. Yeah.
Rabbi Shimon Bar Yochai. If he walked into shul, you would say, watch this guy. Okay, because he just didn't live in this world.
Okay, fair enough.
Okay, so Rabbi Akiva said, it's enough that I and you know your greatness. You're right, you should be number 1. But if I make you number 1, everybody else is going to complain. What are you making that guy number 1? You know, so you're number 2.
That's
okay,
right.
Now, this is a person, you know, so just by the fact that he was able to learn 22 hours a day, and not have to worry about anything, that in itself is shows on a, quite an accomplishment. It says that there were other people who tried to learn 22 hours a day, and they were successful at learning 22 hours a day, but they weren't as successful at making a living.
Right. Yeah, he was.
Rabbi Shimon Bar Yochai, he sat and he learned.
Yeah.
And he would say, you know, Hashem, Rabbi Shimon is kind of hungry over here. And someone would knock on the door and say, Rabbi Shimon, how many passing by? Here's a basket of vegetables.
Right.
Or tea, as the case may be.
Yeah, yeah, whatever.
Okay,
yeah.
And you say, you know, Hashem, it's getting kind of cool in here. Someone would knock on the door, I brought a load of wood for you.
Yeah, yeah.
Okay, he was not living the high life. He was living on substance.
Right.
And he didn't have, he had a nice-sized family, but, you know, they all had shoes, and that was basic necessities. You know, hey, God, my kids need shoes. You know, so the guy next door said, my kids just outgrew these. Could you take them, please? You know, that kind of stuff.
Right, sure.
He was living on miracles from Hashem. So other people tried to learn 22 hours a day, and people did learn 22 hours a day, but their bills didn't get paid.
Right, okay.
So this is a this shows on the level of who Rabbi Shimon Bar Yochai was.
Right.
Okay, so it said, he said that the merit of Avraham was enough from the world, enough for the world to keep it going from his time to my time. Huh. The merit of the Zohar is enough to keep the world going from my time till Mashiach comes.
Wow.
Okay, so this sounds like, you know, again, it's like a little bit of... arrogance on his part, but no, he was a pragmatist.
Yeah,
he saw that what's going to keep the world going is Pnimius HaTorah. Pnimius HaTorah, we know that what keeps the world going is the Torah and the mitzvahs.
Right.
And what's Pnimius HaTorah is the neshama of the Torah and the mitzvahs. Right, so the Zohar representing the neshama of the Torah and the mitzvahs, if you're going to have that now and introduced into the world in a way that is user-friendly, and people will be able to learn it and to implement what it says there. That'll keep the world going until Mashiach comes. So he wasn't being arrogant about it.
Just stating a fact.
Yeah, exactly. Shalach Nikr B'nai Aliyah. They're called B'nai Aliyah. Why are they called B'nai Aliyah? B'nai Aliyah means not only that they are a level of ascent.
Because they can make that statement and it doesn't affect them.
That's right. Shemahapim hara umaylin oysa l'kedusha.
Yeah.
That they're able to convert the evil, make it no longer evil, and elevate it to kedusha.
Yeah.
That's what a real tzaddik is able to do.
Yeah.
Okay, he says later on, why can't a Benini do that? Tie a rope around your waist and pull yourself up.
Have a good time.
How are you going to do that?
Yeah.
Right. As he says, cool, you want to elevate the evil to Kedusha. Okay, that's fine. That's all very well and good. How are you going to do that if you're stuck in evil?
The only way you can do that is throw over something higher than you.
That's correct. Okay? So the Alter Rebbe is quite pragmatic. We're stuck in it.
Yeah, yeah.
I mean, there's a very simple reason why most people aren't Beninis. You don't want to be.
Exactly. A fact.
Okay, people like their
yes, they do.
Their pleasures.
Yes, I do.
You know, not you know. Never mind giving up. We're not into giving up pleasures. That was yesterday's Hayom Yom. The difference is there were three tzaddikim. There's a new edition of the Hayom Yom that just came out, fully annotated edition of Hayom Yom.
Really?
This is a book. This thing weighs like 12 pounds.
Really?
Yeah. They took Rabbi Kagan's translation and ran with it.
Really?
Some of the things I'm not too happy with the way they translate it, but because I helped Rabbi Kagan a lot with it, but they do a lot of notes, and notes are good. So it says there were three tzaddikim that were students of the Mezuzah Magid that dealt with another person's problems in a different way.
Okay.
There was Reb Zusha.
Okay.
Reb Zusha would see a person. The person wouldn't have any problems. That's it. No more problems. Okay. Reb Levi Yitzchak of Berdichev would pray for the guy. He would really feel this guy's problem, right, and he would pray for the guy. We'd daven for the guy, and then the problem would go away. And then there was the Alter Rebbe, the Balatanya. who, seeing of another person's problems, would say, well, here's the tools for you to work on getting your problem out. You do it. I'm not going to do that for you. And it actually mentions that in the introduction that I don't learn publicly.
Right.
It says that the expression is, somebody else doing it for you might be better, but you'll appreciate it more if you did it yourself.
Yeah.
Right? So, so the tzaddik has the ability of taking evil and turning it into holiness. There is a story that I say to exemplify this.
Including someone else's.
Yeah. Oh, absolutely. Jeez. Yeah. The evil of the world.
I never thought about that.
In 1970, Air France offered its first sale on transatlantic flights.
Yeah.
It was like $350 round trip Paris to New York and back. Okay, on today's market, 1970, that's 40 years ago.
Yeah.
So I figured it'd be probably what it is now. It's probably like an $850 flight. Yeah, that's about what it costs, you know. So anyway, the price had been like $1,200-$1,500 in 1970. They dropped it down to $350. There were four plane loads of French Lubavitchers that came to New York for Sukkot. They got this deal, and they all borrowed money, and they all went.
Mm-hmm.
Okay, the first time that many of these people visited the Rebbe, Crown Heights had no idea what hit them, because these were people who only spoke French.
Right.
And they wanted it right now. So the Rebbe was a Francophile. He lived in France for a couple of years, and he liked French people. He loved French Jews.
Really?
At Simchas Torah, the Rebbe told a story.
Yeah.
He said that during the War of 1812, which we're talking about the Napoleonic Wars, not when the Brits burned down Washington, for example, but the one that they made the overture for.
Mm.
The Alter Rebbe under no circumstances wanted to be under the dominion of Napoleon.
Right.
He believed that Napoleon was a wizard and could only bring bad into the world, uh-huh. and did everything that he could
to oppose
Napoleon, and he, because of his efforts, he earned the title of honored citizen for all generations and his help in stopping Napoleon. There's all kinds of stories.
Wow.
As he was running away from Liadi, he asked his brother to double back and listen to the song that Napoleon's troops were marching to in cadence.
Mm-hmm.
Okay, you got to march for a long time. So in America, they have this really stupid thing that they go, hey, two, one, two, three, four, one, two, three, four. That's what we march in America.
Right.
Because they're basically a bunch of hicks and can't think of anything better.
Yeah, exactly.
Okay. So he went and he hid in the bushes and he heard Napoleon's soldiers singing. He was very musical and he got it. And he sang it to his brother, the Alter Rebbe. And the Alter Rebbe sang it just a little differently. And said, it's no longer Napoleon's march, it's now a Hasidic niggun.
Mm-hmm.
And most people who are not familiar with it haven't even got a clue what Napoleon's march was, but Lubavitchers sing it at the close of Yom Kippur.
Yom Kippur.
Right? Okay. 2 weeks later, the Russian winter hit really hard and knocked Napoleon's soldiers for a loop, and they were driven back.
Mm-hmm.
So the Rebbe continued the story. He says, this is 1970, there is another Napoleon in France who is worse than Napoleon, and maybe we could do a similar thing. I'm not making any guarantees, but we'll give it a try. And the Rebbe started singing La Marseillaise. Mm-hmm. The 1,200 French Lubavitchers went wild. Lubavitcher Rebbe is singing the French national anthem.
Mm-hmm.
Okay. And from then on, it became a Lubavitcher Nigun. They sing Hederes V'Amunah to it. Hederes V'Amunah L'chai Olamim Habinu V'Brach L'chai Olamim. 2 weeks later, Pompidou died. Pompidou was the one who refused to honor any of the contracts that Israel had made with the French defense ministries.
Right.
There's a whole story about how the Mossad went in and stole 24 Mirage jets that they had paid for, was paid in full, and the French refused to deliver them. You know, all kinds of stuff, all shenanigans like this.
Yeah.
So let's just get them out of the way.
Okay.
Okay. So what was it? Why this? Because what happened is, as it was explained, is that something like a cadence march and a national anthem is the highest behind the army, the highest behind the country. And if you take it away from being belonging to the klippa, which is both the nations of the world, and you elevate it to make it a niggin, they don't have any chayas.
Right.
And what happens if you take the chayas out of something?
It dies.
It dies. Finished. So that's what a tzaddik is able to do. A tzaddik is able to take the evil of the world and completely and
transform it.
Turn it around so that it becomes something which is holy. That's what the Rashbi refers to as B'nei Aliyah Shehein Ma'atim, that these superior people are very few. Because there are not many people, because in order to be able to do that, this person has to be not like Joe Bainany, who's in the midst of the mire. He has to be above the mire. Hmm. He has to be totally out of Klippa, so that he can able to pull out whatever chayas is in Klippa. Because remember, God also created the forces of evil. And if God created something, that means that there's godliness stuck inside them. That's the vitality keeping them going. Does that make sense?
Sure.
So what does the tzaddik do? He recognizes this is the godliness of that's stuck in this klippa. I'm going to break open the shell, which is the klippa, take out and extract the kernel, which is the godly spark within that, and elevate it to holiness.
Mm-hmm.
And what's left then? The shell. Nothing. Okay? So that's how we know a tzaddik is a tzaddik. If he could do such a thing, he's a tzaddik. All others need not apply. Kedisa b'Zohar, it's explained in the Zohar, the Hakdama and the preface. Shekishiratza Rabbi Chila alas lehechel Rabbi Shimon bar Yochai, Shama kal denafak va'amar man menachayin didachashech mahavim lenahar te'imim barir lematika adkan
l'yaisin
l'hacha. It says in the, what does it say over there? There's a story. There's Rabbi Chiya.
Mm-hmm.
Rabbi Chiya was one of Rabbi Shimon Bar Yochai's close students. After Rabbi Shimon Bar Yochai passed away, so Rabbi Chiya got lonely. He wanted to go talk to his Rebbe. So he had what was referred to as Aliyas HaNeshama.
Mm-hmm.
Okay, so you ever heard of Aliyas HaNeshama? You've heard this concept? Yeah? No? Aliyas HaNeshama?
Yeah.
Okay. His soul left his body and he went up to heaven. Okay, how it happens, I don't know. I don't practice it myself. I'd like to keep my soul right where it is, thank you. I'm going to start playing games with parts of my soul leaving my body, except when I sleep.
Yes.
But anyway, as he approached the chamber of the soul of Rabbi Shimon Bar Yochai, he heard a voice cry out, "Oh, somebody's coming to see me. I'll have you know, since this is the world of truth, and I can only deal with truth back in the world where there's falsity and there's things get covered up and nothing appears the way it is. Okay, so I have to deal with it." The story when they came out of the cave, Rabbi Shimon Bar Yochai and Rabbi Elazar first came out of the cave after 12 years. Rabbi Elazar looked at this guy farming, said he's wasting his time, why isn't he learning? And he burnt them up.
Right.
And Rabbi Shimon said, "No, you can't do that." And he looked at the pile of ashes and unburnt them. So let's go back in the cave. Now I'm going to teach you how to live in the world. Okay? But Rabbi Elazar was right. What's that guy farming for? Let him go sit and learn, and God will take care of everything else. That's really true. But that's not the world we live in.
But it's not true for him.
That's not the world we live in. Right. So, Rabbi Shimon said, I had enough of it when I was down in the world. Now that I'm here, I can only appreciate emes. I can only appreciate truth.
Right.
What's true? If someone can convert darkness to light and tastes bitter as sweet, that person can come here. Mm-hmm. Now, it's interesting that he uses those expressions. Why doesn't he just say, if anybody can convert evil to good? He doesn't say that. He's waxing poetic over here. You know, what's...
Probably not.
The Pasuk in Tanakh, I think it's Koheles. I'm very bad with footnoting. Shlomo Melech said, Re'ishi Shiyes Yisrain Me Chachm Min Asichlis K'may Nahira Min Achoshech. K'may Arias Min Achoshech. Shlomo Melech said, I see that there is an advantage of wisdom from foolishness as the advantage of darkness from light. Now, it doesn't say wisdom over foolishness and darkness over light. It says wisdom from foolishness and darkness and light from darkness.
Right.
That darkness is only around in order to be able to discern light. It's the only reason why we have darkness. Mm. Okay? And dark is analogous, of course, with the evil. So what he wants us to say is just like the foolishness. If you have somebody, like right now, we have 60 watts. We have 360 watts of electricity in this room. Okay? And if you notice, I got a burnt out bulb over there. Okay, so it would make it 7. So would there be a big difference between 360 and 420 watts of electricity in this room? Maybe
some.
It'd be a difference. You might notice it just like a little bit of that little shadow off the page.
Right.
Okay, but if it was totally dark, and I put a 7-watt bulb on, it would be a big difference because now the room would go from being dark.
Black.
To not dark.
Right.
So there's a difference of, there's a great quality now, but that's light over darkness.
Right.
Okay. It says that when Mashiach comes, so we know why it is. This is the Medrash says, the complaint that the moon had in creation, you got Shnei Ma'aris HaGedolos, two great luminaries, the sun and the moon. They were of equal value. The moon complained, how could you have two of us?
Can't have two.
One of them has to be decreased.
Right.
So Hashem said, good idea, you're the one. But what's going to happen when Mashiach comes? Since the world is going to go back to the time when it was prior to the 7 days of creation, so the moon will be of the strength of the sun.
So the stupid question is, is the moon a burned out star?
No. It's called Ma'aris HaGedolos. I mean, it's the smaller of the two great luminaries. Just that we could walk around it on it, you know, so.
Okay.
I'm sure if they had to develop a real good suit to be able to walk around on it. If they developed a real good suit, they could walk around on the sun too.
I suppose.
That's also solid.
Yeah.
It's just hot. Okay, on the moon there's no air. I mean, you know, so you have to build an air suit.
I understand.
So unless they could walk around on the sun, you'd have to build a fire suit.
Yes.
So I'm game. I'd go.
Yeah.
Oh yeah, I'd like to walk around on the sun, see what that's like. Yeah. You know, a zillion degrees Celsius. You know,
plus or minus.
Yeah, 2%. Yeah. Have to watch, make sure that doesn't like cause nuclear fusion with my body. I mean, you know, but anyway. That's another thing. So anyway, but it says the sun will be taken out of its sheath, and the sun will be like the light of the 6 days of creation. Right. And the light of the 6 days of creation will be like the light of 250,000 yovels, whatever that means. I don't know. Those are just numbers that are thrown around. Okay, so that when Mashiach comes, the dark itself will now illuminate. You look at it, you say, it'll be nighttime, and it'll be light. And you look out, you say, oh, it's dark outside. But it'll be, you'll be able to see. It'll be fine. You know, it's no problem. Okay, because the definition of dark is going to change now from being this obscure stuff that, like, you can't see through to this illuminating stuff that's...
to a different light.
Yeah, it's no problem. To a different type of light.
Yeah.
Okay, and we'll be able to appreciate it that much greater. That's what he was referring to when he said that the who can convert darkness to light and then who tastes bitter as sweet. To say that you don't taste your food, so that's something that's supposed to be like a real hoo-ha madrega, a very big level. It says that when the Stolener Rebbe, no, yeah, Rebbe Aaron Kalin came, was it Aaron Kalin? I think it was Aaron Kalin. No, it was Aaron Kalin's father, Shlomo Kalin. I don't remember. It's either Aaron or Shlomo.
The one that came here?
No. We're talking 200 years ago.
Oh.
The great-great-grandfather. There was a big tatadam. They had all kinds of debates going on between the Karliner and the Alter Rebbe. And the Karliner said, okay, listen, we're going to get down to the bottom of this, and we're going to work this out, and I'm coming for Shabbos. So this is a big ta-da-da. This Rebbe is coming to the Alter Rebbe for Shabbos. Mm. And the place had to be like totally tip-top. And everybody was given jobs. Somebody was running around and he realized, you know, no one was given the job of salting the soup.
Oh, yeah.
So he threw some salt into the soup. Gave it a stir. Fine. Good. Off they went. Another person comes running through. He's got whatever he's got to do. He says, nobody was given the job of salting the soup. Throw some salt into the soup. Okay? Everybody ran through the kitchen and said, oh, nobody was given the job of salting the soup. So what happened over here is you had 10 people salting the soup.
Right, you had a pot of brine.
Yeah, when the time came, they served the soup, and the Alter Rebbe started eating it, and Shlomo Karlin took a sip of it and put his spoon down. And the Alter Rebbe took the salt dish and pushed it towards him and said, do you need salt? And he said, it's inedible. And then everybody tasted it and went, ugh. Uh-huh. And they realized what had happened and everybody had a good laugh. Ha, ha, ha.
Yeah.
Okay, in the meantime, the soup was ruined.
Right.
So, Bishlok Arlene asked the Alter Rebbe, to you the soup was fine. How'd you do that one? And he said, one of the things that we learned in Mezrich was not to taste our food. Okay, so he turned off his taste buds. They told us that in Morristown too. The food was so bad.
Yeah, that's a totally different madriga.
If you tasted it, you couldn't survive.
Yeah.
And there's actually a story. When Lubavitch first opened up back in the 1880s, so they hired a cook whose name was Reb Asher. Okay, and Reb Asher was legendary in his cooking skills.
Uh-huh.
The Bachram came to him and said, we want soft-boiled eggs if you don't mind. Uh-huh. So he says, fine, well, tomorrow I'll make soft-boiled eggs. You think all the eggs are hard-boiled. I says, the eggs are fine, but could you make soft-boiled eggs? Okay, so he said, fine, tomorrow I'll make soft-boiled eggs. They come back the next day, all the eggs are hard-boiled eggs. Okay, and they go a third time. And he said, how come you can't make soft-boiled eggs? He says, well, I cook them, they don't get soft. Okay, this is the type of cook that Reb Asher was. Okay, why did they hire this guy? Because he said he could cook, I guess.
Because he needed a job.
He needed a job, he's a nice guy.
Yeah.
His lunch was inedible. Lunch was the big meal. Okay, and it was inedible. To the point where the Bachram complained to the Hanhala, who was a previous Lubavitcher Rebbe, before he was Rebbe, and said, the food's inedible.
Yeah.
Okay, so he called in Reb Asher, and there's Reb Asher, he says, we're getting complaints about your food, that you can't eat it.
Mm-hmm.
He said, I'm trying to teach the Bachram Eskafia. I'm trying to teach them that they shouldn't get so involved with the pleasures of the world. Huh. So the previous Lubavitcher Rebbe said, that's my job. Your job is to give them what not to be involved in.
That's my job.
So as far as the food and tasting and these things, okay? So,
I love it.
But that's turning your taste buds off. This is not turning your taste buds off.
It's going to have what you ate of it.
This is now. What he's saying is tastes bitter is sweet. That what? It's food. Is it healthy for me? Okay, I'll eat it.
Yeah, yeah.
It tastes fine. Okay, it doesn't matter. Why am I eating it? I'm not eating it for the simple, mundane pleasure of it. I'm eating it in order to be able to serve Hashem. Right. It's healthy for me. And if it's bitter, it doesn't matter. Yeah. Okay, that's what you call a B'nai Aliyah. That's what you call a tzaddik. The Oid Nikroim B'nai Aliyah, there's another reason why they're called, when we flip the page. And there's another reason why they're called B'nai Aliyah, people of elevation. Mm-hmm. That all their service to Hashem, whatever it is that they're doing, all the fulfillment of their Torah and the mitzvahs, hu l'tzara gavaya, is for Hashem's sake. Mm-hmm. And it's up to the highest levels, not just to attach themselves to Hashem, because he said back in chapter 5, he gives the example of what does it mean to learn Lishma?
Yeah.
This is like a level that everybody wants to achieve and attain. I'm learning the Torah for its sake. And he defines, what does it mean? Well, later on in the 40s, he talks about ulterior motives, for example, as being the wrong reason to learn Torah. He says, even if you're learning for the wrong reason, keep learning because eventually you'll learn for the right reason. Mm. If a person is learning to become a big Talmud Chacham, and everybody should realize their greatness, that's the wrong reason. That's a terrible reason to be learning. So he gives an example. What's the reason of Lishma? In order that I should be able to attach myself to Hashem. Mm. That's called Lishma. And over here he's saying, we're going to take that one step further. That he's going to, in order not just to attach himself to Hashem, because I'm learning to attach myself to Hashem, so there's a little bit of ulterior motive over there.
I'm attaching myself.
Yeah, yeah. I'm getting the benefit of being attached to Hashem.
Right.
Okay, now, it's sort of like the question, you know, everybody knows, what question can't you answer yes to? And to be telling the truth. Okay, just the old joke from second grade was, are you sleeping? But there's another one. Did you have a good davening? The question, did you have a good davening? Because what's the whole purpose of davening? I'm davening in order that I should have a sense of feeling of self-abnegation, that I don't feel myself. Yeah. And I feel a sense of attachment to Hashem, that I don't exist. So as soon as I say, I had a good davening, I'm saying, I didn't. Right, because I'm putting myself into it. Yeah, I had a real geschmack in davening. Yo, I love that davening. Chach. Okay, that's not it. Okay, so now, so this person is not, so to learn Torah in order to cleave to Hashem, so there might be some sort of ulterior interest in it, even though it means that he's learning in order to lose himself. And if he truly does lose himself, he's not there. He's not, I lost myself. He's attached to Hashem. But this person is not, this tzaddik is not even doing it for that reason. He's doing it laravach tzamanu nafshu la'tzaman la'Hashem. In order, as it says, in order to quench his thirst to Hashem. As it says, hoi kol ha'tzama leichu l'mayim. G'moshu v'machem achar. As the prophet says, ho, anybody who is thirsty, let him go to drink. Referring to people who have a real soul desire to get closer to spirituality should go learn Torah. But what does it mean now when we're talking about someone who's a B'nai Aliyah, somebody who is a person of high quality? As it says in Tikkunim, which is a part of the Zohar, Ezuhu Chosid, who is considered pious? Hamis Chasid im Kainei im Kandele. Someone who is kind with his master, with his nest, meaning with his source, the root of his soul. In order to unite the Holy One, blessed be He, and the Divine Present down here. As is explained in Raya Mehemna, which is a part of the Zohar written by Moshe Rabbeinu. Meaning to say, so what is this person's modus operandi for everything that they do? The Rebbe spells this out quite clearly later on, that the whole purpose of creation is to make a dir b'tachtonim for Hashem. That this physical low world should convey godliness. How is that possible? We know there's godliness within the world. We said before, everything in the world is created by Hashem. Everything has a spark of godliness within it. That spark of godliness, which is in everything, is the result of the divine presence, the Shekhinah. The Shekhinah is, Shekhinah is a Zohar word. But really, what is the Shekhinah? The Shekhinah is the creative aspect of Hashem. When you're talking God as creator, so you're talking Shekhinah. And that creative aspect of God is in the world, keeping the world alive. Then there's something called HaKadosh Baruch Hu. When you say the word Kadosh means removed. The definition of Kadosh, holy, sacred. The word sacred means removed from the mundane. That's what the word sacred, that's what the word holy means. So you have this level of HaKadosh Baruch Hu, the level of Elokus, which is removed from the world. But it's not just called HaKadosh. We don't just call him HaKadosh. We call him HaKadosh Baruch Hu. What's the word Baruch mean? Baruch means to draw down. When you say a bracha. Okay, what does it mean, a bracha? A bracha is different than a prayer. In fact, a bracha is exactly the opposite of a prayer. Praying, davening, is to elevate the low to the higher. That's what we're trying to accomplish when we're davening. A bracha is trying to bring godliness down. When a person, before they eat something, and they say a bracha, what they're doing is bringing godliness down upon the thing that they're about to eat. That's the purpose why we say a bracha. The word bracha is related to the words, two agricultural words. There's a bricha, which is an irrigation ditch. And then there's mivarech, which is grafting. What's the connection between the three? In both grafting and irrigation, what do you have? You have something that doesn't have any life. With irrigation, you have a field that it's not near water. With the grafting, you've got a branch that's not connected to the tree.
Right.
What do? You make some sort of a pathway whereby this thing that doesn't have any life is now connected to a life source. In the case of the grafting, you graft it onto the tree trunk. And in the case of the field, you connect the ditch to a river, and that allows the water to flow to it. So it's the same thing with a bracha. This world needs more godliness. And when we say a bracha, we are digging a ditch, you might say, making a channel for the godliness to, from its source, to come down into this world. So we have this term, HaKadosh, which means removed, but then we call him Baruch Hu, who can be drawn down into this world. So why is it that the HaKadosh Baruch Hu should be drawn down into this world? Because what happens then is we have this thing that we say sometimes in davening, sometimes before people do different mitzvahs, L'shem Yichud Kud Shebrichu Shechinta, to unite the divine presence with the Shechinah, with the HaKadosh Baruch Hu. That we're trying to bring this level of godliness, which is above world, and have it be manifest and realized within the world. Okay, anybody can do that. The tzaddik especially is, that's his whole purpose in living, is in order to reveal the higher level of godliness in this world. And thus by making this world a greater conductor for godliness. As it says, like a son who works for his father and mother and has more compassion for them than himself. He would rather see them being able to survive and their needs being kept and his own needs being kept. To redeem them, etc. That's the second. V'shnehem oylem b'kana echad. Both definitions are sort of intertwined. First definition is, what's a b'nei aliyah? Is a person who can convert darkness to light. Second one is a person who has more compassion and desire for Hashem. They're both the same thing. Because of the fact that they're able to purify the godliness out of the realm of Noga, meaning that elevate the godliness out of the klippa, umailin mayin nukvin, and elevate, quote unquote, the feminine waters. That means what we're able to accomplish. Venasi yehudim elein yeldyainim. It gets united then with the upper levels of godliness, which are beyond revelation. Laherid mayin decharin, to bring down the masculine aspect of godliness. That's like Kadosh Baruch Hu is masculine and Shekhinah is feminine. Shehem heim mimecha chasadim, shevachol mitzvah zemitzvah, shemarach mitzvah zaseh. That this is called the feminine, the waters of kindness, which is in each and every single mitzvah. Every time a person does a mitzvah, most, the vast majority of mitzvahs require a physical item. Leather to fill in and wool tzitzis and a wax candle, etc., etc. When a person uses those for a mitzvah, they're elevating that physical thing. It's now being incorporated into godliness. Such that, for example, your tefillin, you can't take them into the bathroom, you can't put them under your bed, you have to bury them when they wear out, because they are conveyors of holiness. They are not just, if you took a pair of tefillin and put it under a microscope, it would look exactly like a pair of shoes under a microscope. Same thing. It would look exactly the same. But the tefillin have been converted to holiness. They are conveying the upper levels of godliness down here in this physical world. And that's true in every single commandment, that what happens then when a person is using the tefillin is that they are inducing godliness within themselves. As it talks about in the Zohar, the different kavanas of when a person puts down tefillin, tefillin's like a transmitter receiver going on over here. We're drawing down godliness into our head and into our heart. So that we become more refined individuals, and so that we're greater vessels in conveying godliness. That means to say, a drawing down of godliness, Hashem's holiness, from a higher level to a lower level, to enclose itself, that godliness now is expressed through that physical object, as will be explained later on in the 40s. Any questions? You guys have been really quiet. If you don't ask a question, here's one of two things. Either you understand it totally, or you haven't got a clue what I was talking about. So.
I'm going to go with B.
Okay.